Good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Do we have a roll call?
Director Davis? Director Payne, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Director Housen? Director Holdaway?
Here.
Director Clipstein?
Here.
Acting Chairman Matt Leon?
Here.
Director Payne?
Here.
Director Riley?
Here.
Director Siegel?
Yes.
Director Wong?
Here.
Thank you. The meeting has been noticed in accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act. Pledge of allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the next item is the approval of the July 28, 2011 minutes and the executive session minutes.
Approval.
Second.
Any comments?
Yeah, thanks to Tom, a nice synopsis of the executive session minutes and one remark, because he put it better than I did.
I had a comment on the public comment on bottom of page 5 where we voted. And it was rejected by a vote of 3-4. I think you had used in brackets the number of no votes or yes votes in other places. But just to clarify.
Just so we can clarify that.
Yeah. And that we needed 5 votes to pass that.
That's correct.
Right.
So we'll just clarify that.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other comments? Okay.
Do we get a vote on that? Do we approve?
I don't have a motion.
We have a motion.
You did.
And a second.
I heard Susan. Susan.
Okay. So roll call.
Yep. Director Davis? Director Holdaway?
Abstain.
Director Clipstein?
Yes.
Director Payne?
Yes.
Director Riley?
Yes.
Director Siegel?
Yes.
Director Walton?
Abstain.
Acting Chair McLemore?
Yes.
Sorry, somebody did call in. Nicole or Dale, are either of you on the phone?
It's Nicole.
Thank you, Nicole.
Sorry, I'm late.
Nicole Crickle from the Governor's Office, Authorities Unit, is on the phone.
Okay, I have nothing to report. We'll go now to the Executive Director's report.
Okay. As is the norm, we're going to start off with an up-to-date count of what's been happening with the Highland Development Credit Bank and our activities. So with the aid of a PowerPoint, the PowerPoint afterwards will be posted on the calendar page of our website and becomes part of the official record, along with the audio and, of course, the minutes. The HDC Bank created the initial purchase program to acquire credits from qualified applicants. And to date, we have nearly completed 3 rounds. We've got 2 reconsiderations to date in the 3rd round. In the 1st round, there were 87 Highlands Development credits purchased on 109 acres, and the amount paid was $1,392,000. The 2nd round was 54.5 credits on 81 acres, and the amount paid $872,000. The 3rd round to date, we have authorized.
Dale, David.
Hi, Dale. Hi, Dale.
Sorry, I'm running late.
Okay, this is Eileen. We just started, and I'm giving an update on where we are with the program.
Okay.
In the 3rd round, there were 203 HDCs authorized for purchase on 130 acres for the amount of $3,248,000. The average price per acre for those properties is $18,780. That does include commercial. Now I'll run through and you'll get all the different combinations. Under the program to date, the bank has acquired 134.25 credits resulting in the permanent protection of 174 acres. Six more closings are pending. So to date, the last bullet point is about the actual closings to date. So that's 174 acres with six more closings pending. You're currently authorized, you've currently authorized the fourth round of the purchase program. Upon completion of the third, there will be over $2 million in remaining acquisition funds from the original $10 million that was allocated to the bank. Under the fourth round, November 3rd, which is next week, is the deadline for submitting an HDC, Highlands Development Credit Allocation application to the Highlands Council, if property owner has not already done so. And because we have two new members with us today, Mayor Holtaway from Bedminster and Freeholder Walton from Huntington, I'll explain a little more about the allocations. Anybody can come in and seek an allocation such that they would know what the value would be on their property if they were to proceed with the program. However, in order to have the bank purchase your credit rights, which is the second step, you have to meet the eligibility that has been set forth by the bank board. And I'll explain that eligibility criteria in a few moments. So the November 3rd deadline is for the allocation application for round four. December 29th is the deadline for submitting a Highlands Development Credit Certificate application if the bank, if the property qualifies for consideration in that fourth round. And then February 2nd is your first meeting of next year, and that's where the bank meets to review the applications that qualify for the fourth round.
It should say 2012. It says 2012.
Oh, 2012. Thank you. Here is the qualifications at the moment, the eligibility criteria. Currently, there are five priority acquisition categories. The first is, according, and this is according to the Highlands Act, those properties that missed qualifying for exemption number three, and the bank added to that, and have extenuating financial circumstances. The second criteria is, in the priority order, suffer from extenuating financial circumstances. The third is missed qualifying for exemption number three. And the next two are the categories where the bank expanded the program at the point of round three of the program to allow for those that qualified for exemption number three, but the exemption expired. And finally, property that's located in either the special environmental zone, which is the highest quality lands from a natural resource perspective, or high value agricultural priority area. And these are designations done by the council according to the mandates of the Act. And so if those properties are located in either of those two areas, and the property owners previously offered the property for preservation purposes and were denied. The reason for this is the TDR has always been considered sort of the third leg of the stool. So if a property owner has tried and they've got these exceptional quality lands, either for agricultural or natural resource values, they've tried to get into other programs, SADC, Green Acres, county programs, local programs, non-profit programs, they now have an opportunity to come to the council and the bank. To qualify for extenuating financial circumstances, a property owner must demonstrate that the owner is experiencing an extenuating financial circumstance and that the owner's equity in the property to which the credits will be allocated is substantial in relation to the owner's net worth. That's how they meet that criteria. Through the first three rounds, 24 applicants have sought consideration under the bank's extenuating financial circumstances. Eight of those applications were approved in the first two rounds of consideration. Three applicants qualified under the third round, and two have sought an offer through a HDC certificate application. The council has received Highlands Development Credit Allocation applications from 76 property owners, since the program was launched in November of 2009. This includes 46 new applications since January of this year. To date, 66 applicants have received an allocation determination for their property. 49 received an actual allocation within that determination. Property of 17 applicants didn't receive any allocation. So of the 66 that we responded to, 17 didn't actually get an allocation. 49 did. Now, the reason why some don't get an allocation is because for some reason there's no remaining development potential to which you could allocate Highlands development credits. It might be pre-Highlands Act environmental constraints. It could be access issues. We found that in the case of some properties. It could be undersized lots and existing easements that occurred in one particular property where it already had an easement on it, thus couldn't be developed. Or deed restrictions. So those are some of the reasons why those properties would not have received an allocation. In total, the Highlands Council has allocated 1,088 credits to the 49 applicants' properties, and that's a total value of $17,408,000. So in other words, since the beginning of this program, if you had purchased all of those allocations that property owners have received, your total today would be 17 million. But again, a little over 17 million. It's only those then that move forward for purchase that meet your eligibility criteria. And that 17,408,000 is based on that initial credit price of 16,000 per credit. The total acreage receiving an allocation to date is 2,189.79 acres. The average price per acre, again, for all allocations, would be $7,949.62 per acre. Here is a summary of all of that information. We have three columns here, allocations, so people that come in and request an allocation for their property. The second column is offers. So this is for those that meet the eligibility criteria there under the offer column. And finally, the closings that have occurred, remembering that some are pending. The total HDCs under the allocations, 1,088 HDCs, that's development credits, under offers, 424, and closings to date, 134.25 credits. The total value of all allocations is there, that's nearly 17.5 million. The offers to date is just under 7 million. Closings is 2,148,000. Then you can see the total acres on allocations over 2,000, offers just under 500, closings on 173.8. And then you can see, let me just finish it out. The average per acre on allocations would be 7,949. On offers, 14,000 per acre. And on closings, 12,359 per acre. These figures include the commercial properties. Break it down later, residential only.
Just while you're on the topic, I was going to ask later how 2.1 million. The cash flow, getting the approval, getting the checks up has been held. Memos are delayed or anything, but once you're ready to close, you...
We can close very quickly. The only thing that holds us is in some cases there are mortgages on these properties and we have to deal with the bank.
I meant from the state side.
We have no issues in terms of the funding and the closings. In fact, if everything being equal and no problems with banks, we can close within about a 6 month period.
Close it how long?
About 6 months.
Yeah, all right.
So, yeah, no problems. Okay, as at the last meeting, you're all aware, a question was raised as to the non-residential allocations. So staff prepared for you a memo on this issue, and we're going to run through the analysis that we undertook to analyze the methodology of the program. I'll start by sort of having a quick look at the residential side of it before we get to the non-res side. In August of last year, the council staff, on behalf of the Highlands Council, prepared a report, Land Preservation of the Highlands Region. And in that, we assessed the residential allocations, and we did a comparison of how the transfer development program was working and the Highlands Development Credit allocations in comparison to the other two programs under the SADC for farm preservation and Green Acres for environmental preservation. That analysis demonstrated that the per acre value of residential Highlands Development Credit allocations is, on average, consistent with the per acre value of transactions completed under those other preservation programs. Here's a chart that shows you that. So remember, now we're just dealing with the residential side. For the SADC, the farmland preservation Highlands parcels only, and this data was after the adoption of the Highlands Regional Master Plan, so we're talking about from July 2008 approximately on. We did that because we didn't want to capture, you know, we wanted to compare ourselves to what's going on in this time period. Their per acre average was $9,815.88. The Green Acres, and these are fee purchase, but remember they're very highly constrained lands. Their per acre average in the Highlands parcels was $10,264.68. The Highlands TDR allocations, so that's anybody that comes in looking for the allocation, 49 property owners had at that point in time, and the average per acre value was $7,869.25. But then looking at just completed acquisitions, just residential properties, the per acre average paid by the council and the bank is $10,356.29. So what this does is it shows you how the methodology is lining up with the other programs, if the per acre value paid by the bank is in the range of the other programs. And I think you can see the evidence there is that certainly is within the range. So the question then before us was in terms of the non-residential. So going back to the Act itself and how we did our analysis of valuation. Section 13 of the Act requires that the Highlands Council set the initial value of a development right. Considering the DEP rules and regulations that were in effect the day before the enactment of the Highlands Act. In the Regional Master Plan, the Council established a specific methodology to calculate and allocate development credits for both residential and non-residential properties. Both allocation methods utilize the pre-Highlands Act DEP rules and municipal zoning as the factors in the allocation method. Within the approximately 860,000 acre Highlands region, only 72,000 acres are zoned non-residential. That means they're either industrial, office commercial, or retail. So that means that only 8% of the region is zoned non-residential.
Do you have any idea how many lots that is?
I don't.
Okay.
But what's more important really is, so 8% of the entire region, 860,000 acres, is zoned non-residential. But when we're looking for sending areas in the preservation area, in other words, those properties that are eligible for Transfer Development Rights Program, there are only 3,500 acres of vacant non-res in the preservation area. So non-residential properties vacant in the preservation area, an extremely small data set, only 3,500 acres. To date, we've received 76 applications for allocations, and we've only received 9 of those that are for non-residential. So I'm trying to put in perspective here the very small data set that's available to us. The Regional Master Plan allocation method for non-residential property considers the pre-Highlands Act development potential, and that is expressed as the permitted square feet of the building area. And then what we do is we look at the unit values for different types of non-residential uses. So that is the land values on a dollar per square foot, and they vary between retail, office, and industrial. So we take, that's how we do that allocation. And we have an online tool that assists landowners in understanding what the allocation range is, but it couldn't actually be done for the non-residential because it's so case-specific and municipal-specific. We have to go to each municipality to understand what their zoning allows for in their non-residential areas. So we have to understand what their square footage is, whether they do office, industrial, commercial. We also have to look at issues such as infrastructure. The Highlands Council has issued to date 5 non-residentially zoned properties. And the average per acre price of those 5 allocations is approximately $70,000 per acre. Now this is the most pertinent information to use because obviously these 5 properties are in the preservation area and they are eligible as sending areas, so they're eligible into the program. The Highlands Council has 3 primary zones in the Highlands region. The protection zone, which is really your most natural resource area lands. The conservation zone, which is really your agricultural lands. And your existing community, which is your developed area, mostly with some infrastructure. The existing community is not eligible. That is where we would look for development and redevelopment opportunities. This becomes important as we explore this. So those 5 non-residentially zoned properties are going to be in either protection zone or conservation zone. The average per price, according to the methodology we used, was $70,000 per acre. The variability between those 5 allocations issued to date is based on a number of factors. It could be the size of the parcel. It could be the zoning, because there are different values for industrial, office, or retail. It could be the pre-Highlands Act environmental constraints, which allow limited, depending on the amount of constraints on the property, they can limit the development. And in terms, again, sorry, of the zoning, industrial, office, or retail, you're going to have to look at the infrastructure to support that. And then when we look at the infrastructure, if the area we're looking at was approved for sewer service prior to the Highlands Act, there's greater development potential. If they're on septic systems, they yield smaller buildings. So that accounts for the variability in this next chart. So here you see the 5 non-residential allocations we have done to date. And you can see there's some variability there. The first property allowed for a per acre cost of just under 70,000 an acre. The second one, and if you look at the size of the property, it's only 2.31 acres. That limited it. That was a limiting factor. And so that one came out at 161,000 per acre. The top one, I believe it was industrial use, was allowed on that one, right? Warren and Independence, the third one there, the per acre value is 18,000. In West Milford, again, just under 70,000. And the second parcel in West Milford, again, a smaller parcel, 30,000. So there is variability in it, depending on the circumstances of each particular block and lot. Now, the other way we could compare and look at the data is we looked at information we had received from SADC and Green Acres during the period that we were preparing that land preservation report spoke of. And again, a very small data set because we're looking at non-residential. Mostly when you're looking at these farm preservation programs and Green Acres programs, you're not looking at commercial, industrial, or office space zoned properties. We could only see in both cases one acquisition for each of these programs. I will tell you that both of these were in the planning area. Couldn't find any in the preservation area. However, they were in the correct zone. Remember, protection zone, conservation zone, existing community. Existing community we wouldn't look at. That's where we look at development, redevelopment. These, so they met the criteria from that perspective. And you can see the prices here per acre for the SADC piece, 92,000 and change per acre. And for the Green Acres one, 106,000 and change per acre. So when we compare our model to that, those again, limited data that's available. Those two transactions from SADC and Green Acre are approximately $100,000 per acre. When we look at the allocations the Highlands Council and the HDC Bank Board have made to date, it's $70,000 per acre. So we see that the model does compare. It's right there within an acceptable range of the other programs. So next, here you see three non-res properties. We looked at actual sales within the preservation area, within the area of similar type properties in our that we have given allocations to. So, are these are planning area properties? Yeah, these are planning area properties, but again, the correct zone, which was the critical factor for us, conservation or protection zone. And we looked for similar highway commercial, highway business. We wanted them to be as close as we could to the properties in question and the allocations we'd given, and in particular, the property that you're reconsidering today. We actually had a greater data set here, but we took out ones that had development on them, because even using Mod 4 tax data, it's difficult to get at the value of the underlying land if you take off the developed portion. So we stuck with the vacant, because it was the closest analysis we could. In this case, you see the three properties and the per acre value for actual sales. In the case of the first was 92,000 and change per acre. The second one, 159,000 and change per acre. And the third one, 86,000 and change per acre. So this is, looking at that then, the conclusions we drew from that was that the farm property in Franklin Township, which will be the for your reconsideration today, it received an allocation of 42 credits under our methodology, which equaled just under 70,000 per acre. And when we looked at the three similarly situated parcels, they had a per acre value of 113,000. That's their average. So the 70,000 per acre average per price of the five allocations, again, the model held up. They're realistic per acre values when examined against, in this case, the $130,000 per acre average of comparable land sales. The question might come up in terms of development easement, which is what we're talking about, versus fee simple. The remaining value in the property that you're looking at today, you will see, is going to be minimal because there's no exemption retained, so there's no opportunity to develop that property. So it can continue in agricultural use, but obviously we'll have a very limited resale value. So we don't think there's much to argue between the fee simple and the development easement price. So finally, because we had a very limited data set, we wanted to see if we could actually sort of do some mock-up allocations. So we looked for sales within the preservation area of vacant non-residentially zoned parcels, and we couldn't find it. Other than the data we previously used for those three similar properties and they were in the planning area, in the preservation area we couldn't find those sales because again the data set is so small. So we did branch out and we thought, well, we're going to try it in the planning area. We ran into a new problem in the planning area, and that was we couldn't find it in the correct zone. But we decided again, just in the interest of really trying to explore the model, of going further, and look, we found properties, seven undeveloped commercial properties in the planning area, but they are all in the existing community. So the values are going to be higher because those are the areas where they're significantly developed and often there's infrastructure available. But we still thought it was worthwhile to test the model. So the other part of this is that when we do allocations, we do what we call it sort of a desk review first. We can look at aerials, we can check local zoning, we can check a lot of information sitting at our desks and come up with the first allocation. After that, we send staff in the field because there are certainly properties that we say we have to visit these particular properties. We have to go out there and look at issues of access, for example. and there are other issues that we may need to examine. So we have two of our staff who are planners who are in the habit of looking at development applications instead of we send them out in the field. Our experience to date is that has taken the value down somewhat. Because they, and that, and in some cases where we didn't actually give allocations, it's because they discovered things like access issues. In the case of these seven, I want you to know that we stuck with the desk review because we got sufficient information that the methodology was working again within an acceptable range. So we saw no reason to go further with the study. We had done what we set out to achieve, which was to examine the model and make sure it worked. So looking at all of these, here are some of the issues that can come up, again, with that site visit. Looking at examination of sewer infrastructure and capacity, water infrastructure and capacity, road frontage access restrictions, contract conditions. Sometimes if there's pre-approvals on these properties, it's a very different value to a property that has no approvals. Easements, approvals, status of permits, contamination, we found that on one particular site we were looking at. Required roadway or other public improvements and right-of-way dedications. That's why often we go out in the field it can reduce the price. We want you to be aware of all of these. The assessment compared an estimated HDC allocation for each with the actual sale. On average, the per acre value of the actual sales of the seven properties examined was $197,645 per acre. Our model gave an average per acre value of $193,000. But again, you know, you're looking at that, you're seeing it's much higher than our average to date on actual properties, which is $70,000. Again, it's because these properties are in the existing community zone, which is not eligible, and is an area where we'd be looking at development and redevelopment opportunities. And just so you know, we have come across some of these vacant properties in the preservation area, in the existing community zone, and we have worked with municipalities such as Mount Olive. In one case, we've already gotten approval for a redevelopment project on a vacant lot using the impervious surface around and a waiver provision. So, in other words, it's again why they're not eligible for this program. There is another method we can use to get equity on those lands and have development opportunities. Likewise, we're examining another property at the moment with Mount Olive, similar conditions. So these properties weren't eligible. Here you see, though, the results of testing the model. And you can see the per acre price for each of the particular properties and what the HDC price would have yielded. And yes, there's great variability here, but again, when you total up the averages, we see that we were within an acceptable range. So again, important considerations regarding non-residential zoning. I did speak about the residual value of non-residential property under the Highlands Act is minimal, because if there's no exemption remaining, they retain vacant land that is deed restricted for either agricultural or conservation purposes. So perhaps there's the opportunity to sell to a farmer who's farming lands in that area, or a conservation group. Perhaps they could be donated. Those are the kind of options open, but the residual value is minimal. The average of $70,000 per acre for the allocations to non-residential properties is significantly higher than that for the residential properties, which are currently in the range of $8,000 to $10,000. And that is because the Act itself requires that the value of the development right reflect pre-Act development potential. And those properties that were zoned for non-residential use, such as, again, the office, commercial, retail, and industrial, have a higher per acre value because those uses reflect that more valuable development potential before the passage of the Act. Keep in mind also that the non-residential properties don't have the opportunity of an exemption for commercial use. The exemptions they would get are residential use only if they can get the zoning changed. So there's limited opportunities for that. So as a result of the analysis that the staff did, we are confident in saying to you that the methodology held up. It is part of the regional master plan, and our analysis, we believe, was as in-depth as it could be using the data available, but certainly proved itself as a working model. With that, I turn that over to you as our work, and Mr. Chair, how you'd like to proceed.
Well, I'd like to thank you and the staff for sending all this information, getting it out to us almost a month in advance of the meeting, so we have time to review it. I believe that you've done a good job of distilling all of this various information, so we are comparing apples to apples. I would concur with you that the model we are using is working as it was intended to. The values are similar to the other preservation agencies, even though they do have a different method for determining the valuation. Seems to me you've answered all of the questions that were raised at the last meeting. Does anyone else have any comments, questions regarding the report?
Yeah. Thank you, first of all the information. And I mean, this was my concern at the last meeting. I found the information provided very, very interesting, very informative. I guess I don't know where the bank's going with respect to the future. I think we're in the early stages of a program, and I think we should want to make sure we keep honing our skills and our process to get things as right as we can as we go. And I still have serious concerns about the value that's being attributed to non-residential properties by virtue of the HDC allocation. I think that the last table that Eileen went over shows us that the HDC value would have exceeded the actual sales price value in 4 of those 7 cases, and by 160% higher on 2 of them. That's a lot. That's a big amount of money to be over what was an actual sales price. And Eileen was stressing what a very small sample, what a very small universe of properties that we're looking at here. And that just makes the comparisons more and more difficult. You know, everybody in the real estate industry understands we can take, you know, 2 pieces of property and compare them, but if you take one property and compare it to against 100, your data is much more resilient and much more reliable. So, you know, a couple of my observations on the tables. One was like this Warren County table. You know, all 3 of those properties are 2 acres or lesser in size. The smaller the property tends to be a higher per acre value. We're comparing that to a 10-acre property. So again, when we look at that, none of us sitting around the table, I don't think, are licensed appraisers, but I know that this is the kind of stuff that makes my appraisers crazy. You know, that when appraisals come in, you know, did they properly adjust for differences in size and the like? And so, to me, there's enough here to raise some questions about whether the process is perfect, whether the allocation formula is perfect, and or perfect enough for us to spend money. And I still think that we'd be well served to check the valuation associated, particularly with these non-residential properties, with an actual appraisal. And you know, if the SABC and if the Highlands Council or the bank wants to enter into an MOU or something with the SABC to perform those appraisals, you know, after we could do that. I don't know if that's the concern, but to me there's enough here to make me not comfortable, and that's my concern. So that's right.
Again, going back to the concern about the valuation based on lot size, I haven't seen the properties. Just at looking at the various information and what was presented by Lee as part of the criteria, there could be environmental constraints with, even though it's a parcel that's 10 acres, maybe only 1 acre is able to be commercially developed. So it's not always a linear track.
Right.
So you need to extrapolate that. Getting to your point, yeah, we should and we shall strive to get the most accurate and fair values for the affected landowners as we can. But I'm of the opinion that the only way we're ever going to get to that point is when we have a free market flowing system. Currently, we could either have appraisals or we could use our model. I think in the current climate of real estate, which, again, in my opinion, I think we're in some sort of mid-state depression for where things have been going. In light of the information that was presented, I am of the opinion that the model is functioning better than an appraisal. Appraisals in this climate can be all over the charts. And one thing that the appraisers do not want to do is to overvalue a property. I mean, they're always trying to get the correct value. But again, from my experience, it appears in the climate now that they're trying to drive the value down. And I think, again, my personal view is that we should try to give the landowners the most reasonable compensation and equity that we can. And for those reasons, I believe that the model is working properly. And I just don't see a reason to go about and change it. And it just doesn't seem to be necessary at this point. We can come back, and we should come back in the future and look at the not only the non-residential, but the residential valuations as well. Okay, but we just need more time. We are in our infancy here. Maybe in a year we have more properties go through the system, and we get a more stable real estate environment. We can do it then and get really more accurate results for that time period.
Being a newbie, I get asked silly questions sometimes. So on your table 3, you have some of these disparities, that dental application number is on page 7.
Yep.
That $1.8 million is a 2002 price.
Yes.
By 2007, that property was probably $3.5 million.
Actually, I can't tell you which one.
When you take a look at the time of the HDC value, there's two time points here. I mean, what are the time points? One obviously is 2002, the HDC value lives in today value.
It's 2000, it's whatever was in existence 2004, the day before the act.
The day before the act. Yeah, when a lot of these transactions, you don't know, again, are they friendly sales, are they package sales where they transacted several items and they're allocating the money, as we know, happens in real estate and these kind of things. So, you know, and it seems to me that the process is that we're required to use the formula, the model, and the RMB. So if we wanted to consider a change, this board would have to pass a resolution requesting the Highlands Council to go through the whole process all over again.
Correct. And the Highlands Council can't do a simple revision. They'd be revising the regional master plan.
Public hearing.
Not that I'm suggesting one doesn't do the right thing. Well, certainly, if the staff hadn't felt confident in the model,
right,
we'd be making a recommendation to you other than what we're making.
Yeah.
But yet, the process, you are correct, is back to the council. The council revises the regional master plan if the council felt that the model wasn't working.
Right.
And then they have to go through that process of public hearings.
Now, the council spent years developing the regional master plan, and this model was developed carefully based on the criteria that I've read. I was not, as you know, I've only been there for coming up on 2 years, so.
Yes, there were experts involved in a peer review.
I would think that if there's a motion that we ask the council to review it, then send that up, and if not, we just.
Well, I'm not sure, though, that this is one of my continuing questions about what powers this bank does and doesn't have. I mean, the credit allocation formula has been a established by the council, and the minimum price has been established by the council. And from my understanding, the council's made the decision about who's who's a hardship or not. So, what is our role then? I mean,
for the applicant receiver processor, sounds good. I mean, it's.
But we are
a creature of the Highlands Council.
I understand that, but we are also sitting here authorizing the expenditure of public funds. And I don't agree that it's written in stone in the statute that this bank couldn't have some thoughts of its own and maybe want to make sure that it's being very judicious when it spends public taxpayer money to check some things that, you know, based on an appraisal. I'm not saying to throw out the allocation formula or the plan or anything else. I'm just saying we're early in the process. There's a couple red flags appearing, and should we take action to deal with those red flags?
And I agree that red flags come up, but the process is we gotta move it to the council because they're the ones that establish the criteria,
come up with a suggestion,
propose resolution, and then address it, move it on, and then let the council look at it.
To be fully clear, the analysis that we've gone through with you today was sent to the Full Highlands Council because it is their method, and I wanted them to have these materials, and they had them before their last meeting, just so that everybody knows. And the issue about the hardship determinations, this board knows that we, even though the decision is a council decision, we've been totally open with all the materials. Now, the new people will know this. But we've had executive session where we have given all the materials to the members on those hardship allocations. So I wouldn't want members to think that something was done and then you're not even privy to the information. So just to know that the council does have this method, this analysis of the method. And in fact, I spoke with one of the council members this morning. Of course, three of them are here to make sure that they had reviewed this, because again, they have the opportunity, having received the materials, to voice a concern if they have.
The funding is also, after we vote to approve funding for a particular parcel, is it not sent on to the council and to the state for their review and approval?
Yes, because the council actually approves the minutes of the bank board. So any action by the bank board can actually be vetoed by the council. The council then sends those minutes along with the minutes of their meeting to the governor. The governor at that point has veto power over the council and thus the bank board.
So there are multiple steps in approving the funding. It's not something that's just done through this body. Everything that we do is reviewed, and we're doing the process that we've been following is the process that was envisioned by the council and the state.
Correct. The program was required to be put together by the council in the act. And the act actually required that the council set the initial credit price. That's within the Highlands Act.
From the chair, I was ready to say, came my turn, I agree with all the remarks you made. To that last one, take a slight exception to that one on this point. When a board that has a technical assignment makes a finding on a decision, and then it goes to a council, which you might call a policy board, there's the governor's council's office, which is over policy issues. There's a heavy reliance on the expertise of the initial finder. So they're not going to make a substantive second guess of what this board of directors does unless someone raises an issue to them to do so. So our vote, yes, there are multiple layers at which the question of fiscal accountability can be rechecked. But the fact is, this is the primary decision maker, the technical expertise that says this is an expenditure that should be made for this subject property. And unless somebody goes, like a board member or someone, goes to the next level and says, I'm uncomfortable with this, they have no real reason to second-guess that kind of a technical judgment if the allocations are correct. So I, up until that, I was agreeing with almost everything you said. As for this report, I've said many times, I've said it to Jeff and the staff, that this allocations model system, I think, is something that should attract national attention for people who are making these efforts, and that we did an infinite amount of work to prepare this allocation system, and now you've done this evaluation, which adds to the infinite amount of work, so you've literally gone to infinity and beyond. I've tried to work as hard as you worked in writing this, and trying to sort it out. I also compliment you on your honesty in producing all the data that your study showed. I will second, I think Ms. Payne made this point, especially toward the later sales dates. It caught me that some of these market values, sale prices, were awfully close to the development credit price. I understand the Highlands is a rarefied atmosphere. However, across the state, certainly throughout my tenure at the SADC, we have seen a marked and impressive growth in after values of preserved farms. I understand we're in a rarefied atmosphere. There's no more rarefied than the Highlands is. The Highlands has also been seeing that trend. So after values are not to be taken lightly. These preserved properties, particularly agriculturally viable and solid agricultural operations, which is outside of our purview, they can have a pretty good after value. Secondly, the point on the real estate, and you're a professional in real estate, so I venture cautiously. My look at the data, which is what I spent a lot of time doing, showed, and I talked to people about this and have actually had meetings and things and presentations. The real estate downturn that has hit New Jersey and the Northeast most hard has not really hit as hard on open land. What we've seen with open land is a decline in growth and a flat out, what some might say, a correction, end of the bubble, whatnot. The real devastation of real estate has been on property improvement decline. The value of the homes that are on the property is declining in value. A recent study from the Department of Banking and Insurance showed that mortgages that are underwater in New Jersey, it's largely the housing price that has declined below the mortgage value, not the land price. And we've seen in preservation, we've seen our certifications and appraisals, they're flattening out. And I really, except for instances in different pockets of the state, you haven't really seen a decline. You've just seen it stop. There's instances that break that rule, but across the overall. So I'm not so sure we would see that much of a change. This bothers me a little. Now, my concern has always been the advocacy for appraisal. Because, as I've said, I don't believe this method as much as it holds water, and all of this was shown to hold water. It can't be applied until we have a transfer market. I think that this research, if I am not reading it wrong, and I may be, in effect, you've executed appraisal by doing comparables on pieces of land on subject property A. I'm not satisfied on subject property B that that's happened. So, yeah, we have all sorts of strict standards in the preservation programs of two appraisals, a review appraiser who's independent reviews them. The appraisal has to have a book, it has to be this thick, it has to be bound in black, it has to have pictures, comps have to be illustrated, and you have to tell us where in the tax books you found the comps, in case the review appraiser wants to look up the comp and finds out you weren't even in the right town, and so on and so forth. And you didn't do that exactly, this is not a book appraisal, but I don't necessarily need us to reach that bar. I'm satisfied with this report that whether you intended to or not, you appraised subject property A. Maybe a licensed appraiser would run out of the room to hear me say that, but I think that we have that.
I'm not satisfied we have that on B, so I would entertain at the time, although you probably have the votes, that perhaps this resolution can be divided into two votes on the two subject properties.
We'll get to that.
You may not need to do it because you may have all the votes you need. I also believe, but I'd be interested in Susan's point of view. I was on the fence about her point at the last meeting and remain on the fence, but I was intrigued by her idea of self-imposed hardship on subject property B as a post-Highlands Act acquisition. And I was on the fence when you said it the first time, but I wonder what your view is as to whether that question has been satisfied in the data you've got.
Maybe we should just wrap this portion up and then we can.
All right, if you can address that.
We have that ready to discuss when we got to that property, because that property is not a non-res, so it wasn't party to this discussion at all, because it's a residential property.
Right.
And so we were prepared to speak about that later.
Thank you for validating why we're here, for our expertise as we.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't put too much weight in the next. The council, I've been to a handful of meetings, not lately. At the governor's office, I'm very familiar with the process of review and recommendation for veto. I've written several veto memos to assist staff. They just don't review these kinds of things there.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry on that. Nicole is on the phone. I have the relationship with the governor's office. Jim, as the chair of my council, knows this. I go over everything with a fine-tooth comb. There is no action you ever consider or take that I haven't given them full advice on, because I would like to make sure that we don't get vetoed, because I prepare things well in advance. So I can understand, Ralph, different authorities run in different ways. My way serving the council and the bank board is full disclosure, and even when I deal with the Department of Treasury, they each get a copy of the regional master plan. They probably find out more than they ever would like to, but that is how I deal. So they do have the information, they do ask me very specific questions, and they pay attention to the detail.
We're saying the same thing in different ways. I know what you mean. What I mean is there is a reliance on underlying, there's a benefit of the doubt given to underlying decisions, particularly of a technical nature. There's a benefit of the doubt.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
That's the rationale.
You can't count on, well, if we make a mistake here,
policy is not going to go through the process that week.
Right.
And they're not going to follow, the next council's not going to follow up and do everything that we did at this board, and the governor's office is not going to do everything that either one of those previous boards did. They rely on the expertise of this board.
Said it better than that.
As a side note, just concerning the value of land, as you know, the home prices are going down. What is getting squeezed is the cost of land, especially in new construction. You have to take the juice out of someplace. That's the bolts of the house, there. Property values are going down. I don't know why you're not seeing that. Anyway, does anyone else have any comments?
Ted, members of the public are asking, would members pull their mics closer? They're having difficulty hearing.
I apologize.
I'm doing sign language.
Okay.
Real quick, so you had mentioned something at the beginning of your comment about your beginning stages of something, and I wasn't sure where you're going with that, so we're talking about something else.
Well, I think the bank board and the council are at the beginning stages of trying to implement the TDR program. You know, they spent tremendous time and effort developing the absolute best allocation formula and program they could, given the constraints of the statute they're operating in. And so, here we are. This is, I think, the
Highlands,
right? And the bank board's life is early, right? This is only, we're only 2 years into this, and I just feel like we shouldn't be so afraid. It's not the right word, but so worried about the implications of wanting to divert from where the council's been or where the bank board's been, because we're still learning. We're going to learn a tremendous amount as we move forward. And I think our ears and eyes should stay very open to observations and, you know, recommend corrections along the way or observations or things to make the program better. I'm not in any way here to defeat the bank board or the TDR program, God forbid. I've spent most of my career trying to accomplish TDR programs. I just think that we should be very careful here. We're talking about values that may be representative of more and potentially substantially more than current market value for the easement we're buying. And even in the Green Acres and the SADC programs, you know, the legislature has gone so far to say when you appraise these properties, you still have to pretend as though pre-Highlands zoning and pre-Highlands environmental constraints exist, and we do. But we still look at those properties through the lens of today's market. So that is one thing that's being lost here, is there's no consideration of the value of this development potential in today's market.
And that's accurate, but doesn't also reflect the future market as well. Those property owners will not get the value back moving into the future, as that also turns around. Those property owners have been impacted greatly, in my opinion.
They have.
And nothing is cookie cutter. Serving many years on planning and zoning and Morris County open space, no piece of property is going to be equal. So it's hard to describe a average price and kind of put it across the board.
Right.
There's just so many variables. Short of having appraisals done on each and every property, which is costly in itself, rather usually more costly than some of the differences as well.
My concern was mostly on non-residential because the sample is so small that going into the allocation formula and today as we look at it, looking at a very small number of transactions that we're comparing this to, and I, for one, I'm not satisfied that we completely answered the question. So I don't want to put the council on or the bank board on the spot, but I will give some consideration to working with staff to see if I can understand what they think our statutory role is, what our capacity is, whether the bank board would consider performing appraisals for properties as needed, and I guess we can discuss what that means going forward, just as a check. I don't think that would be unwise. I think we learned something from it. Either we're going to learn that we're overshooting or undershooting, or we're going to learn that we're hitting it just right on, and we'll have more information to insulate our position. I think any way that turns out, I think we're better than not being sure.
Comments?
I think under any appraisal method, you're still going to have a limited data set. I appreciate the hard work that went into the assessment. I think it supports the method for now. I certainly agree with checking in over time and making sure it's holding up. And I too wish there was a free market support to all this. I mean, that really would make a difference.
Right.
So, I'm satisfied with the
assessment. Also have to remember one last point is that it's commercial property. It's a different animal than residential. And even within this designation of non-residential, there's all the different subsets of industrial, retail, and commercial. And they all have different, what makes commercial property so different is the income producing potential. That's something which doesn't exist in residential. And that is just a wild card. So it's really hard to look at residential values being down here. We look at commercial values, which are up here, because they're different. They're completely different creatures. And that's always been the case. And commercial will always command much more money than a residential is. Okay, we need to take an informal vote, an IMA, or just put it on. Okay, so for the time being, we'll utilizing our model for the non-residential.
And Mr. Chair, the next matter on the agenda is the resolution and the authorization to acquire HDCs on the third round of acquisition consideration. Now, this is where Ralph has asked to consider them separately, but perhaps if you want to have the discussion first and then decide how you want to move forward.
Well, there was also a question raised last time about the eligibility of parties who purchased after the act was enacted.
Well, we were prepared to deal with the properties separately so that you could have fresh in your mind the non-residential allocation when you deal with the first one, and then move on to the second, but as you choose.
Well, since this is our first reconsideration, and we do have two new members, should we go into executive session to discuss it?
We can only go into executive session if our chief counsel deems that it's appropriate, and I would leave that to you.
I think perhaps we have it prepared in the PowerPoint, and maybe if we go through the PowerPoint slides, and then if you want to go into executive session after you're presented with that, then we'd have to address it then.
Okay.
At the July 28th meeting of the bank board, the bank approved purchase from 5 of the 7 properties that were under consideration in round 3. The property owners of the 2 properties that were not approved are seeking reconsideration. One property qualifies for consideration on the basis that all or a portion of the property is within the high value agricultural priority area. The property was offered for preservation but not eligible. The other property qualifies on the basis of extenuating financial circumstances. So that just deals with how they are eligible for your consideration. The 2 properties are Franklin Township, Block 15, Lot 11.03, which we will deal with first. And the second one is Washington Township, Warren, Block 40, Lots 33.01 and 109. And for the new bank board members, this is the first occasion the bank board has had where eligible properties that were recommended as eligible under the program were denied by the council and then by the bank board and then back on the agenda for reconsideration. The first of these properties is being reconsidered in light of the discussion you've just had, because the question arose at the last meeting as to the methodology used for those non-residential properties. Thus, you've had the discussion, and you've seen the analysis of the methodology, so now we ask you to consider the property. Here on the screen, you can see the property in question. It's outlined in black here. This is the property. It is a vacant piece of land. You can see other commercial properties around it. It's on Route 57, which is a major highway in Warren County. It is presently in ag use, as you can see, and there are contiguous properties that are preserved properties through farmland preservation. The property would be preserved under an ag easement for the entire property. The question was raised, and Ralph spoke about after value. The council staff have looked at after values of preserved properties, because it's very important to us as we continue to work with landowners who do preserve their property and talk about the future of those properties. And we're pleased to say we agree with Ralph, that we've, and I know Susan would know this information too, that we've seen very high values for these preserved farmlands. But generally speaking, they come with a residence. And that is the difference. Because if you're going to preserve farm with a residence on it, when they're sold later and the value gets higher value, it's because there's a residence there, the farmer can continue to live, have those lands. That's what we've seen. We have not seen the same being true for a vacant piece of land. From a logical perspective, one would say, what would be the continuing use for this? Why would its land value increase when this piece of property will only ever be used in this particular case for agriculture? So possibly it would be for the farmer that farms the adjoining properties. That might be a value, unless the particular owner wanted to continue some kind of ag use themselves on it. But but it certainly has limited opportunities. The particular piece of property is 9.69 acres, again, zoned for commercial use. The allocation of Highlands Development Credits is 42. That, again, is based on the square footage of an industrial-type building, which would be highest and best use on that building in accordance with local zoning and ordinances. In the case of this property, if the bank board reconsidered, a deed of easement would be applied to it if it were preserved. This is a picture to show you, because I told you there were preserved lands. Here, these show you the preserved lands, but here you can see the contiguous ones right by the particular subject property. We always use that because when the council was looking at priorities for both for preserved lands for natural resource protection and for agricultural use, the greater the cluster of lands, basically, the greater the protection, both for farm preservation and indeed for natural lands protection. So that's the information before you on the first property for reconsideration under the resolution. Do you want me to proceed with the second property, Mr. Chair, or would you rather discuss the first one?
Go ahead.
Second. Okay, the second has no bearing on the prior discussion. The second property, property B, which is in Washington Township, it's in Warren. It is a residentially zoned properties. It's being reconsidered because the property owners satisfied the eligibility criteria because of extenuating financial circumstances. The financial hardship was not self-created, because if it were, you would not be considering. The TDR provision of the Highlands Act, that's section 13, does not restrict eligibility based on ownership prior to the passage of the Act. This is an important consideration, and I'd like to ask Tom to explain this to you, because it's an important consideration, and it's where we can look at how the legislators treated the different preservation programs so we can better know their intent. So I'll ask Tom to speak to that.
So in the Highlands Act, the dual appraisal methodology was created for both the Green Acres program and the SADC program. In that, those provisions of the Highlands Act, a provision was added that landowners first participate in the dual appraisal approach must have owned the property prior to the passage of the Act or family members related to them at the time. So Section 13, which is the TDR section, did not include a provision to that effect. The way one interprets statutes is the legislature knew exactly what they were doing when they passed the law, that they very well could have imposed a very similar condition in the TDR section, but he did not. Therefore, the logic is that the legislature did not want to impose such a restriction. This reading of the statute is very consistent with our approach in the TDR program, that we are a methodology to provide equity where property owners have not been able to participate in Green Acres or SADC, that the TDR program is essentially the last resort. Therefore, the least restrictions should be imposed as possible. Therefore, what we recommended to you was that the bank not create a limitation on financial extenuating circumstances to only allow those that are in financial hardship if you bought after, and deny those that bought after the passage of the Act. So that's our recommendation.
And it's your opinion that if we did enact something like, if we did enact that provision of having to own the property before the Act, we would actually be in violation of the intent of the Act?
You would be running counter to the intent of the TDR section. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Now, there's a distinction is that as a wholesale policy, we would recommend it not be done. Because you have to do prioritization, you can always set priorities, but a wholesale exclusion would probably think would be counter to the Act.
A look at the property in question here. It is, there are two block lots in question in Washington, in Warren County. You can see this one here, against round in black, and this small one. So there are two lots at issue here. Together they comprise 43.75 acres, again zoned for residential use. The allocation for both properties is 16.75 Highlands Development Credits. An agricultural deed of easement with conservation protection to be applied to those, to the wooded area, would be applied. That's for the larger lot. In other words, agricultural uses here and a woodland management exemption here, but conservation protection. And in the case of the smaller one, a conservation deed. So that is the second lot for your consideration today. Here, showing it again in the context of preserved lands, you can see those that are colored in green, contiguous ones here, and other ones around the area that are already preserved through one of the other programs.
Just one, what road is that property from?
It's across the top, Jackson Valley Road.
Hey, Bob?
The access to that landlocked lot, how is that being provided? I missed all that.
No, you didn't miss it. You can't see it, but do you see a house here? Well, you can see that there's sort of disturbance here. Take my word for it, it's a house back here. There is a driveway. You better back.
Yeah.
If Tom's telling me to go backwards and Jeff's telling me to go backwards. Now you can see the house.
Okay.
Thank you. There is an existing driveway that comes up here and goes across here. It's already in existence to this lot. It's already in the deeds. It is a shared driveway, and it's already in the deeds for access for this property back here.
Those are cross easements that
yes.
we have.
Yes. So, but yes, because it is, I mean, it's a very obvious question, because otherwise one would wonder about access to that particular landlocked piece, but indeed the access exists and is already in existence, the driveway itself. So those are the two subject lots. They are in the resolution that is before you. Question is how you want to proceed, Mr. Chair. If we were to go into executive session, it would only be obviously for those matters that are privileged, and Chief Counsel would enumerate those if you wanted to.
So this question of access, these subject lots are treated as one parcel that would be for our considerations.
They're two separate distinct parcels, and each parcel has a deeded right to access. So there was nothing prohibiting them from being sold separately with a right of access.
So in effect then, subject property B is two properties?
It is indeed.
And the HDC allocations are for each piece of property separately?
Yes, we did give you a report that showed you that should the owner decide to exercise an exemption, it would reduce the allocation accordingly. What we're showing you right now is because the landowner would have the opportunity to use TDR, the HDC allocations for both properties, or could exercise an exemption and thus reduce it. So for example, on the smaller lot, it has an allocation of two HDCs. Thus, if the owner said, I'd like to use the exemption on that, that property would be taken out, the exemption could be used, and the allocation would be reduced by two HDCs and the corresponding $32,000, plus each allocation is
$16,000. Okay. Actually, fairness to the new members.
Just a quick question. As to the hardship issue, that's already been clearly defined by the bank rules.
The hardships are officially done by the council. The council staff does them, as you're aware.
That's all resolved.
That's all resolved and recommended to you. At the last meeting, in executive session, we did discuss that, and you're privy to it in the materials.
Okay.
There is certain confidential information pertaining to a landowner's particular criteria that makes them eligible for the program. Those matters we do discuss in executive session because they're privileged. But yes, that is all settled, unless you have questions and you are privy to it.
I just want to make sure that that's...
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the issue I had raised at the last meeting, I was kind of caught off guard by the fact that we were entertaining an application for hardship relief from someone who bought property after the Highlands Act. But I totally understand the desire not to completely exclude them. It could be 30 years down the road, or next year for that matter. But I do think that the bank board should give some consideration to a lower priority for those kinds of applications, particularly in this environment of limited funding. So, you know, that's something I'd recommend you look at the next meeting or whenever we're going to talk about our criteria again. But I don't have an objection to that on its face anymore.
Take a look at that as funding becomes more limited.
Right.
Do you think it should be built into the hardship decision-making process?
Well, the hardship decision-making process is at the council level. So here, we've been prioritizing, you know, what we would take first. And to me, someone who had, you know, no control over having been subject to the Highlands Council or Highlands restrictions is a higher priority in my mind to provide relief than someone who bought the property after those restrictions were already in place and kind of walking through it normally. So, right.
Well,
all other things being equal, definitely.
That might be a reasonable resolution, either formally or informally, to propose to the council. That might be even though the Act does not recognize a difference, it's not explained, which I didn't actually get. Nevertheless, the council may want to set an additional hardship point, I don't know, extra points or whatnot for being a pre-Act owner in terms of classifying hardships in order of priority. It doesn't seem to apply here, but might be a good idea.
You could prioritize it.
So it does seem to be, on its face, a fair point, although I think Tom's answered the legal question.
Sure, we can't exclude because of it, but we could set the criteria.
Right.
Some of those have purchased before or owned before the Act, but we give it consideration before. So
not a total break, just a part of the criteria.
Oh, something we can do here.
In terms of prioritization, absolutely.
Okay. Fair enough. Any other comments before I open to public?
Can we get a motion?
So
moved.
Second.
So this is on the resolution for both properties?
Yes.
Is there an objection to separating these?
Motion's never made to do.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't mind. The way the resolutions are written, you have to write a totally different resolution, right? It's not just the non.
There's a motion on the floor.
You can just change it now. That will be approved.
We have a motion?
Yes.
Okay, second. Open it up to the public for any comments.
Good afternoon, Monique Purcell, Department of Agriculture. Just a quick comment on this latter property, the person who bought after the Highlands Act, which I agree that you'd think, you know, why would somebody subject themselves to that after the fact as opposed to the people that it happened to? However, there was also the fact that there was an exemption on the property that was expected, that was guaranteed, so the person purchased thinking that there was an exception and an exemption, that they could build a property, and then they later had to litigate just to do that. So that's just another thought. So there was an expectation of being able to develop a house on the property, which turned into apparently a nightmare. So just a thought.
Yes, sir.
My name is David Shope, and it's my understanding that when a deal is rejected by either side, there's a two-year waiting period before it can be reconsidered. I'm raising that issue. Deal with it. Thank you.
Okay.
question just for this parcel or for the other one as well?
It's for both.
The one in Franklin Township also?
Yes, it's both.
My name is Karen Kerner, and I'm the owner of Block 15, Lot 1103. As you know, your board rejected my application on July 28, 2011, because some of the members questioned your own board's method of determining the value you offered me in your allocation letter dated May 5, 2010. I'm here this afternoon to ask the board to reconsider my application for approval of the HDC allocation eligibility offered me by your allocation letter. Some of your board members had concerns with the valuation of non-residential property. I was told the Highlands Council hired a licensed professional appraisal service, Integra, and that the value was determined by a unique method devised by the Highlands Council through the Highlands Regional Master Plan. I feel my application was and still is in complete compliance with all your requirements, and your allocation letter supports my eligibility. Your board has approved other non-residential applications under the present process, and I feel my application should be processed under your present rules and regulations like the other applicants. I feel your board should have addressed their concerns with your valuation results for non-residential properties before my meeting in July and before approving other applications. The board was aware of the value I was given by your HDC allocation letter since May 5, 2010. It's not fair to pick and choose selected cases, and all applications should be treated equally and fairly. Also, I would like to remind the board that this has been a six-year project for me, and I would like to get it settled. I ask the board to approve my HDC allocation application this afternoon. Because my property qualifies as a priority acquisition established by your HDC bank on the basis of it being located within the high-value agricultural priority area, was offered for preservation but did not qualify. And based upon your Highlands Council allocation letter dated May 5, 2010, representing that my property is eligible for HDC allocation and the property is entitled to 42 HDCs. As you can see, I've complied with all your requirements that were dictated solely by your board. I am only asking for what your council said that I'm entitled to. Thank you.
Close the public portion. Any further comments from the board before we go? See none. We have a roll call.
Director Davis?
Pardon?
Dale, we're looking for your vote on the resolution.
Yes.
Director Holdaway?
Aye.
Director Klipstein?
Yes.
Director Payne?
Abstain.
Director Riley?
Yes.
Director Siegel?
Because of concerns for subject property, do you vote no?
Director Walton?
Yes.
Acting Chair Maglione?
Yes.
Question? Yes.
Okay. Next item is public comments.
Purcell again, Department of Agriculture. I do credit the staff for the work they've done to show that the methodology is working. I think it is was a very complicated process, difficult to do in terms of coming up with the allocation method. But I also understand Director Payne's concern, which is a lot of responsibilities were kind of taken from the bank board in a way in terms of, you know, allocations, pricing, and so forth. So I think one of her points is, and it's a very good one, is it never hurts to question. It never hurts to question the process. It doesn't mean you want to throw out the process, but it never hurts to have discussion about the things that concern each of you as experts serving on this board. So I think it's important that you don't feel boxed in, that you're not able to do one thing versus another just because it was already set or the council already decided or anything like that. So I think it's a good point as the program matures, it never hurts to ground truth, it never hurts just to double check and make sure you're going in the right direction. So thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
David Choate. I raised the issue of the fact that, as I see it, once a deal is rejected by either party, it cannot be reconsidered for 2 years. My issue remains. I intend to challenge you on it. Ms. Payne has raised the issue of that they're only been at this for 2 years. The TDR program, according to the Act, should have been established 18 months after the passage of the Act. That puts it in the middle of 2006. Years have been lost because this part of the program has failed to raise it until now. And I wonder how a approximately 45% discount qualifies as an acceptable parameter for determining the model. And I refer specifically to the valuation of $70,000 per acre and three similar, and then go down to bullet point number six, I guess, where you refer to $113,000 an acre. If that were your money, you'd think that $40,000 was a lot of money. I don't see how this even comes close to a fair methodology for evaluating properties.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Helen Heinrich, Jersey Farm Bureau. I wonder if the members have come in contact with a report I just found that was done by PlantSmart New Jersey, where they studied the opportunity for TDR in the surrounding counties, seven counties to the Highlands area. And they're looking into what might be the factors that would encourage it or discourage it. And it's very realistic and very thought-provoking, and I would suggest that you give them all copies or a summary at least of that report. And basically, they look carefully at Passaic, Somerset, and Bergen counties, and did find places that they thought were possible. They had the infrastructure that could be designated by somebody or looking into. But it all depended. Some areas have weak markets where they need incentives for developers, and some have strong markets where the towns have incentives to use the tool. So I'd be interested in, I don't really want to present what they say, but it's certainly something we should all look at.
We can provide links to all members. We actually worked on that with them. We provided them with information, and we reviewed and edited the report for them. So, and gave them guidance on doing that report. So we were very much involved. So we'll give you all a link to that.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. Dave Pfeiffer with the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. Listening to the discussion today, I would share a sort of queasiness about a lack of current value reality check going forward in this program. And one way you might be able to bring some of this forward is that in the case where you might be offered a bargain sale of the developed right, the Internal Revenue Service will not recognize a 2004 value as legitimate. They will only accept a current value. So at that point, if you are, or if your applicant is considering a bargain sale, I believe you need to go to a current value appraisal. And that might provide some data going forward to keep that reality check there. It's sad that one of the tools for estate planning or for financial management is not available because of the insistence on the 2004 value. So, just
a, so what you're saying is that they should consider a appraisal to establish the current value HDCs are based on 2004 value. If there's a discount, the IRS has to see that current value discount.
Correct. The IRS has to see the current value in order to substantiate a charitable.
So if they discounted it based on only the 2004, they would disallow it completely?
Correct.
This is true for the dual appraisal method as well, Bob. Now, we've worked with attorneys like Jim Wise, who's done a lot of work on this, working with landowners. We're not finding landowners who want to offer bargain sales to the Development Credit Bank or the council.
The century is
young. We have a lot of that atmosphere where virtually all of our sales are bargain sales.
I worked on one of those, if you recall, and we actually used that attorney because of this particular matter.
Yeah, and so it would be a benefit to people in the state of New Jersey if those bargain sales could be facilitated in a matter such as that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the public portion. Before I forget the tradition here, the summary sheet for the third round of privilege and confidential. Just pass those down to the summary sheet over here. And also, I want to apologize to our two new members, Bob and Rob, for introducing you and welcoming you to our board.
It's been expressed with real love.
I saw you get up and leave. I thought that might have been the reason. And I also wanted to, Mike has decided to leave the board, and I would just like to recognize Mike for the valuable service he provided. He always had great insight into the financial dealings with these various properties and issues, and he will be sorely missed. Okay.
One of the things that you made a note of during your earlier presentation was the five criteria listing. And so you know, there's 46 applications, five criteria. You're probably going to have a clustering that still may be pretty large. The discussion later went on to adding the hardship for the post 2004, pre 2004 being a criteria. And this thing really picks up steam, and you do get more money, and you do get a lot of issues. I'm just wondering if five criteria is quite enough dealing with 40 applications.
Well, you're currently in the fourth round. We have 11 new applications in that round. Now, at this stage, though, whether they will actually be determined to be eligible is in question. We also have approximately 10 from previous round that were seeking information. In fact, many of them had to apply to a preservation agency to see if they would get in through that program. So we're actually not expecting a large number in terms of the fourth round. But if we did and it exceeded the amount of funding available, then the bank would prioritize those. Yes, so at that point you would get to prioritize if we're running out of money. Welcome.
Comments? Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.